Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Voskan. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, and I'm welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life, love, about spirituality, about looking at life, the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. Yeah, that's going back quite a ways, but we polish it up for today. We call that look Armedoxy, and we invite you to take it with us. Hey, this podcast is being brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net, and as part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. Hey, if you're ready, let's take the next step. It has certainly been a very interesting week, and it is still unraveling as we speak. I'm coming to you a little bit late today, but we're still catching that Thursday deadline. I got Susie here, the producing the show, and she is like ready to like take this MP3 and put it up on the net. Did you notice last week? Did you notice that it made it just before the strike of midnight? I know, it's like a Cinderella drama that unfolds over here. You got to know how we do it. I mean, it is like we put together Next Step really like magic, so to speak. I love because, you know, it's like you say magic and people just say, ah, what is this guy? But it really is. You don't know how this all comes about. But we are now like getting ready for our fifth anniversary, you know. We're in like the fifth year of podcasting. And each week that we put it out, it's like, it's exciting. There's an excitement. I know. Sometimes we get excited. Sometimes we go over on the deep end. But last week was interesting because we had to get it out. And there's nothing that says it. I mean, we're not under no contract except the contract that I have to myself and to you, our listeners, right? That we're going to get it out on the Thursday here on the west coast of the United States. Now, I know that's already Friday for many of you listening, but it's a challenge for us. So last week, as we got it out, I think it was pretty late last night, last Thursday, and Susie was away. She was getting ready for the domestic violence conference that we were having, actually the get-together luncheon. I'll be speaking about that in a few minutes. So she's instrumental. She wears many, many different hats, and she's instrumental in many different programs, and certainly the domestic violence program, Dative Outreach, she's a vital part of that. So she was getting things ready, and would you believe that the file got to her something around 11:30 our time. She did the processing and everything, and then I looked at the date stamp because I thought, okay, here we go. First time in 5 years we're going to miss the deadline, and I looked at the date stamp. It was 11:58. She beat it by 2 minutes. That's like impressive, right? Anyway, I hope that this episode, number 254, will get out there before midnight, and all indications are that we're on course. So let's go, okay? Got a lot to share with you today. Some serious things, actually, everything is pretty serious, but I guess when I think of non-serious things, I think of the many comments that we got about last week's podcast and about the talk that we had with the gentleman, Mr. Partamin. And our friends at the diocese did get us a video. It is only halfway. It's only half of it. But we're going to put it up on YouTube. Actually, it's up there. But I would hold off before you watch it because it'd be nice to watch the entire thing. So We've been getting all kinds of different reactions to it. And I guess the big thing about it was that how serious do you take this stuff? It's very interesting, and it's disheartening too at the same time, that basically our ideas of Christianity are formed in such an immature way, in such a childish way, I want to say. You know, we have this idea that we still do, and that's, I guess, the surprising thing. We still do. We have this idea that God is sitting up there in the clouds, and he's looking down on us and deciding. He's holding the puppet strings, and he makes us move. He makes our hands go up. He makes our feet put one in front of the other, and he decides what's going to happen to us from point to point. And sort of like a chess game, you know, and he's the player, you know, he's playing the game of chess, and we're just pawns, and he's somehow protecting the king, making sure that the king doesn't get hit. But we're the pawns, and we're dispensable, as it goes. Quite different from the image that Jesus Christ presents, saying how important each and every one of us is, explaining that life is meant to be enjoyed, explaining that he came to give us life and to give it abundantly, is a far cry from this idea that we're just basically pawns and dispensable. So it always gets to me that where do these images come from? Well, obviously, we've got movies. We've got today a wide variety of different expressions of religion. I mean, just this morning, we were listening to the news. We're going to be talking about what happened in Boston, the bombing in Boston. And just this morning in the news, this is a couple days removed from that incident, and they're starting to question, where was God? One of the commentators, where was God in the middle of all this? And you know what? Frankly, it is a legitimate question. If you want to believe as God is this grand puppeteer, as you want to believe as God is this the chess player. You know, he's protecting the king, and, you know, okay, so some people are dispensable, and some aren't, you know. And so we have these ideas. It comes to us, and we sort of feed into it, don't we? We keep asking these same things. And that's what I wanted to say. I mean, when you listen to the conversation we had with Stepan Partamian last week, it's these archaic ideas, but they feed a lot of people. A lot of people want to buy into that. I think there's a comfort level in knowing that somehow there's somebody up in the sky looking down on you. And I'll be frank, hey, all of us want that comfort. We all want to make sense out of chaos. I think, isn't that the ultimate questioning and the reason for religion? The reason for science, too. I mean, the idea that we want to make sense out of chaos. So you look up at the universe and you say, okay, there must be a reason why all these little stars are over there. And so science goes on and tells you, well, okay, look, these things evolved in this way, and these things, there's fusion, and these stars came about because of meltdowns and black holes and stuff like that. And other people might want to take a more simplistic approach to it and say that, you know, it was all created. It was like a light switch. It was turned on one day. And no matter what it is, no matter what that tradition is that you want to explain it, it brings some kind of comfort to you, right? It allows you to look at the world and see some comfort and say, okay, this is how it came about. Let's forget about the big thing. Forget about the universe. Let's take a look at the simple things, okay? Simple things in your life. You have relationships. Okay, you want to know what makes it tick? What makes it tick? I mean, because at the very beginning, let's take a simple love relationship in high school. Okay, we'll pick on the high schoolers. Yes, I had a high schooler that just went to his prom, so I saw a bunch of high schoolers the other day, and it made me, I had a chance to reminisce. Those were good times, and of course they were difficult times too, weren't they? High school has an assortment of feelings. There's all kinds. There's good feelings, there's euphoria, and there's also a lot of sadness sometimes, loneliness, what we want to call. But you have this chemical reaction that takes place, and like it or not, there are attractions between people. There's chemistry, and there's chemistry, and then you start thinking about it. Once you start reflecting about it, you say, well, what drew me to to this person? Why do I have this relationship? Well, what are all those questionings? But to bring sense, to bring order out of the chaos. Because you don't want to think that you're just kind of like some random accident, right? You want to think that, you know, there is some kind of design to this whole thing. Even the simplest things, you take a piece of paper and you look at it and the corners are 90-degree angles, right? Well, are there 90-degree angles in nature? No. I've heard someplace, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard, at least in my experience, I know that it's true, there are no 90-degree angles in nature. Okay, so why do we, I mean, designers, architects, we come up with 90-degree angles. We have everything, just about everything we do is based on that 90-degree angle, right? Look at it. Look at the computer you're sitting across from, or the little MP3 player. Okay, look at the piece of paper that you're jotting on. And you've got these 90-degree angles. Well, it's our way of trying to bring some kind of order to that chaos. And so religion does a good job of that, and many different traditions. Okay, what happens after you close your eyes for the last time? And there's a big question, right? The big question. And you have a whole assortment of different answers to it. Some people say nothing happens. It's over. That's it. It's finished. Plugs out. It's not going to light up again. Okay, well, we know that. That's based on our experience, right? We know that once the plug's pulled, it doesn't come back, right? There's no putting the plug back in. That's it. Well, okay, and then you start thinking, well, is that all I am? Right? That's the natural next thought. Is that all I am? Is it just a question of the plug being pulled and then that's it? No, well, I'm thinking. I sense. I have feelings. I have emotions. Well, and those emotions tell me that I'm a little bit more than just a bunch of bones with some flesh on it. Yeah, muscles, too. Fat, too, right? No, I'm a little bit more than that. Yeah, there's my feelings, there's my emotions. Well, what happens to that after the plug has been pulled? And there's an assortment of different ideas on that. There's people who say that, well, you come back. People say you come back and you try to do it again, a little bit better. Some people say you take on different forms. Some people say that's it, and then there's a judgment. And the others say that, well, before that judgment, there's a time of rest. And others want to tell you about, like, you know, going off to different galaxies and different places. Hey, all of them are trying to bring some kind of order to this chaos.
Well, the lush separation involves you and the products of wealth push you along on the byway of their spiritless undying selves, and you press on God's way to your last dime as he hands you the bill, and you're spinning in the slipstream, tideless unreasoning, paddle right out of the maze, and you paddle right out.
And by chaos, I'm not talking about, like, you know, just like all random kind of ideas, but let's use the word mystery, trying to bring some definition to mystery, people trying to understand mystery. Now, you think about what the Armenian Orthodox standpoint is. It's an acceptance of that mystery, see? This is what's unique about this. When you look at our Eastern, well, I should talk about Eastern Orthodoxy, but of course, uniquely, I'm talking about Armenian Orthodoxy. But you go to a Divine Liturgy service. What is the first hymn that is sung? You walk into the Divine Liturgy, and the first hymn that's sung is Horul Chorin. Mystery deep, inscrutable, without beginning. Ah. It's just a proclamation that, hey, we are people, finite, and we're not going to pretend to understand the infinite. So we can come up with all kinds of systems. And we may say that, you know, this is what happens, that this is how it began, this is how it's going to end. But these are mysteries, as is all of life, as are the emotions that we have towards one another. Now, today, when you look at the whole gamut of what we went through during this week, I mean, incredible. You start off with last week we left you, and 2 days later we had the Dativ outreach. It was a luncheon talking about domestic violence, and our dear friend Linda Maxwell spoke at that event. And I have to tell you, what a difficult talk she had to do. But she did it so beautifully, so emotionally. And she spoke about domestic violence, about abuse within her own life, and shared that with us, opened up. And we had an opportunity really to talk to many people that were at that event. In fact, Linda, part of her speech was to make it a dialogue, and she went around the room and spoke to people, and people started opening up. It was really a very magical afternoon, as many things that we do. You know, this is the mystery, I think, of our ministry. There is a lot of ministry. I think it has to do with the faith element. And you can't get this when you're trying to do something secular, but when you're doing something from the spiritual point, you're open to a lot of different angles. And so all of a sudden people started opening up, and then of course offline too we had a chance, many people who came up to me and shared with me some of their experiences. Here's a couple neat things. One of them was we had a Coptic lady who had purchased a ticket. She had come to the event. She was from the Coptic Orthodox Church, and you know that's the closest to the Armenian Orthodox. And she said that we had tried to do this in the Coptic Orthodox Church and failed. We didn't have the support. And so she applauded that the Armenian Church was able to pull this off. Another lady was there. She was one of the counselors from the YWCA, worked with the domestic violence people, and just applauded it that we were able to pull this off from the church. Now, why is that important? Well, from the church, you've got a new group of people that might not avail themselves to a secular organization, but feel the comfort of a church. And so this is a very, very important step in the life of the community. It also, well, it forces us to ask the hard questions. Okay, we're one franchise of the church doing this. And where is the church? Where is the Christian church? And again, remember, last week, this is like happening Saturday. This is only a couple days after that meeting that we had with Stepan Partamian, and he's asking all these questions like, what is Christianity? And he's coming up with all this mythology, the Christian mythology, you know, the God sitting up in the clouds. So you're sitting there with domestic violence issues at hand, and people are talking about them, and certainly the pictures from Chris Brown were up there too, those paintings that he had done for us a few months ago, and all of a sudden we're starting to weave the story together, because all of a sudden you understand that there are problems in the community, people are opening up to it, they're expressing themselves, you have these celebrities, and now it's starting to weave together, and you understand that there is a magic going on, that there is something that's putting it all together. We are trying to bring sense out of the chaos, trying to find some order, and it's working. It's coming out very nicely. Monday comes up, and what do we got? We have another chaotic situation. We have the bombing in Boston. And once again, terror. They use this word terror. Now, terror is an interesting idea. It's not just to put fear into somebody, but fear so that they cannot continue in the way that they're going. So if you stop from what you're doing, the terrorist has won. And that's basically what it is. So these small little bombs that just basically destroy people. And you have to wonder, you know, like, what kind of world are we living in? And I know that's rhetorical, but at some point you sit there and you go, what is this? Somebody gets a pressure cooker, builds a bomb, and then puts in, like, ball bearings and nails just to kill innocent people? And if not to kill, then to maim them, to mutilate them. These are sick people. I found a quote by Isaac Asimov. It says, violence is the refuge of the incompetent. Wow, is that for sure? So incompetent that you can't talk to people? So incompetent that you can't negotiate with people? So incompetent that you can't articulate yourself, even at some fundamental level, that you have to go out there and kill people. It's wild. And of course, now you've got a situation. People calling at church. What do we tell our children? People emailing me and saying, what kind of world are we living? How do you make sense out of this? Well, you can't. You can't make sense out of some of it, right? Some chaotic situations just are meant to be chaos. That's why you got the word. That's why it's chaos. And so the question comes up, where is God? And if God is, you know, some kind of order, then isn't that the antithesis? Isn't chaos the antithesis? We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. Last night we saw Barit Maronyan's Orphans of the Genocide. Of course, big questions there. Struck home. How do these things happen? And one woman who got up, over 100 years old, or close to 100 years old, got up and said, my mother was there. And she said, why did God do this to us? A genocide. And she lost her faith. We're going to be looking at that today, okay? A couple other things as we go along. Right now I'm going to take a break. We're going to play a song, as we always do, Song of the Day. This one's called Chorut Chorin. I alluded to it a few minutes ago. It is the vesting hymn, the beginning of the Divine Liturgy. It sets the pace for the Divine Liturgy. It tells us mystery, deep, inscrutable, without beginning. Ununderstandable, where you can't scrutinize it. It's bigger than us. I've played a few versions through the years. Here's one you haven't heard. Of course, that is the famous and unmistakable sound of Isabel by Rakdarian. We'll put a link on our show notes today so you could check out her music. Chorut Chorhin, I've played different versions of it, and there's so many that I'm sort of like a Chorut Chorhin fan. To me, that's the beginning point. That's the starting place of all faith, of orthodoxy, and particularly armodoxy. It is an intense song. It's intense in many ways, and I think that this version that you heard, by the way, was composed by Gomidas Vartabet. And I think he captures that in this song. He captures that intensity. It begins with, it takes you, if you can listen to it, you know, rewind it if you want, listen to it, it just takes you someplace else. And certainly that's what's happened to us this week. We've really gone somewhere else. Whether it's the domestic violence issues, whether it's the terrorist issues, or as I said last night, we had an opportunity to screen a movie called Orphans of the Genocide. This is by Barret Maronyan. We will put a link on our show notes today so you can check it out. There's a wonderful trailer that's on the internet. But we had a chance to screen this movie last night. It's 1.5 hours approximately. You know, I've seen many genocide movies, and through the years, you kind of get thick-skinned to them, you know? I hate to say it that way. You get thick-skinned. Especially when you've seen them over and over. And you know, I've spoken many, many times about the issue of genocide and how I particularly feel about it. And so it was refreshing when the filmmaker himself, who claims himself as a storyteller, that was refreshing too. He didn't give any political agenda. He talked about himself as a storyteller. And it was so refreshing because somebody brought up an issue about the politics of it. And he just turned and he says, you know, this is beyond recognition. He says, I'm sick and tired of us going and begging people for recognition, and I'm tired of us going out and asking others and waiting for their response. He says, is there any question that the genocide has happened? Now, where have I heard that before? All of a sudden, I felt a kindred spirit. I was so fascinated by that. And that happened at the end of the evening. But it was wonderful. It was refreshing to hear that from someone else. And it's so true. You know, what do you need? Who are you waiting for to validate it? It was a genocide. It happened. 1.5 million people dead. I mean, the idea that there's a diaspora created, right? There's Armenians outside of Armenia as of 1915. Okay, before that, there was maybe a handful. Now there's another million outside, a couple million outside of Armenia. Okay, what does that mean? There's a diaspora that's created? Well, it means that they were exiled. Okay, what proof are you looking for? But anyway, the movie that he showed, Orphans of the Genocide, it documented many of the different orphans and different circumstances of the orphans. But the one that got us was an orphanage that's in Beirut. And this orphanage killed these young children, Armenian children of the genocide. And it killed via Turkification, and eventually there was graves of these children that were discovered. And I'm not going to expose the entire plot because I really, really want and ask you to see this movie, to pursue it and check it out. But spiritually, in the scope of what we talk about here in the next step, I mean, you talk about this ultimate evil, much like Sandy Hook a few months ago, you know, like what kind of terrible evil could there be in this world that they would go after children? And certainly when you come to the situation of orphans, think about it. These are already orphaned, already without parents, already traumatized, and now on top of that, you're going to kill them. You're going to Turkify them. In other words, strip them of their identity, of their personhood. Take everything away from them. And it's much like a blood transfusion, right? Just change the blood. change whatever, whoever they are. And at the end, you put them in this assembly line, and you look at the end and see what's going to come out. It's not going to be an Armenian anymore. And then at the end, kill them. Kill them, and then they find these mass graves. What kind of evil power is there in this world? And where is God? And these are things that we struggle with. I struggle with it as a pastor because, you know, people come to me and they ask me this question. And now you don't have too much time, let me tell you that. You don't have too much time to explain to them, well, you know, God's not in the cloud, because you can't undo a lifetime of understanding. And so this week, I shared with you, we started a new program called Armenian Christianity Today. It's a small little video clip, and I gotta admit to you that clip number one, I'm not satisfied with it, but it's up on, it's going to be shown, it's going to be aired this weekend on US Armenia TV, and it'll be up on our archive page on our YouTube channel. And I talked about the Boston Marathon bombing, because right after that, people were asking me, well, what do we tell our kids? What happens to kids? How do you explain this? How do you explain some barbarism like this? How do you explain this type of evil? How can we understand this type of evil? And, you know, one of the things that came to me is, why aren't we looking for God? Okay, you want to look for God. You want to ask that question, where is God? Why don't we answer it? Ah. Instead of saying, okay, where is God, and then denying that God's not there, why don't we answer it and say, there is God? And you know where I saw God? Those people. Those people rushing out and coming out and helping people. I mean, church opening its doors and letting people line up, take refuge in there. I mean, isn't that what church is about? How about the hospitals? People rushing out, holding people, picking up people, taking them places. How about the spirit? Last night there was a hockey game. And as is tradition at our hockey games, at all of our sports events, we start off with the national anthem. The soloist began, I don't think he went through two verses before the entire stadium was singing the national anthem as a prayer. Yeah, it is a prayer. See, this is what I dare to say. This is this is why Armodoxy is so unique, because that too is a speaking. That too is a communication with God. It's a way of bringing order out of chaos. Because for most people, they don't know. They've got this weird idea of God up in the clouds and everything. Okay, why did God do this? How come God's doing all this? And instead of saying, no, God is not there, they're still trying to figure it out. But they're figuring out, okay, hey, wait a minute. I can bring order out of my chaos. And I could sing. I could be united with a group of people in this stadium. Last night, as we were watching the movie Orphans of the Genocide, it struck me right at the beginning of the movie. He interviewed, part of the documentary was interviewed an older lady. I believe she was close to 100, if not. I remember there was one person that was 104 years old. This might have been the one that was a little bit younger. I guess after 90, who cares, right? It's all the same. They're all considered old people, right? Not to mention that I just recently had a birthday and my kids gave me an application to the rest home. I'm sorry. We have it's called the Ararat home for the aged. No, anyway, this woman who was in the film, she starts off. And she said that my mother was in the genocide. And my mother asked God, why did you do this to the Armenians? And she lost her faith, she said. Typical, yeah. You see the mass destruction. I mean, we talk about a bomb going off at the end of a run. And you think about a genocide where you see not only miles, you see countries, you see deserts full of death, of people being killed, slaughtered, inhumanity. I don't mean to make the comparison, but when you think about a bomb going off, it goes off right there. I mean, think about watching that torture. Think about watching your mother be raped and then killed in front of you. And you have to ask, okay, where, what? You want me to believe in a God? What God? Where is that God? I mean, I remember some point I met one survivor of the genocide. This is, I'd say, about a 20-year-old story. And he says, this is ridiculous. What are you talking about, God? I mean, it's not a question of where is God. I mean, there is no God. How could you even suggest it after what I've seen? I mean, it's true in a sense, right? What are you talking about? What God? Well, it's true if you want to understand God in those dimensions. Within those parameters that we set up. Yeah, he's the guy up in the clouds. He's the guy with the puppet strings. He's the eternal chess player who's got us pinned up against one another. And so today the Turks win, tomorrow the Armenians win, and let's see who could protect the king. It's just a game. Yeah. In that kind of situation, yeah, God doesn't exist. And so this is why mystery is so important. When you talk about mystery, when you try to understand God with our faculties, you try to make sense out of it, be careful, because you got to remember, if you can define God, it's no longer God. So let's try to look at examples beyond the normal examples. Instead of saying that, where was God in all of this, why don't we define it and say, there is God. In the goodness that's around. In the love that is around. St. John, the evangelist, says God is love. Okay. Did we see love at the end of the Boston Marathon? Yeah, I did. I saw something terrible. I saw an explosion. I saw people panicking, but I saw love in the hearts of people who reached out. These orphans of the genocide. Where was God? Did I see God? Yeah, I did. Let's name it. How about the people that helped out? How about the missionaries that came in and had no reason to be there except that they knew that they were human and they needed to reach out? How about the kids that just stood up there and really found the inner strength? How about the kids that were just left out there but somehow managed to get through? Well, what is that somehow? The inner strength, the inner workings, finding that inner love. And you know what? It's not all defined by the way we think. You know, when you talk about genocide, it's beyond belief. It's beyond understanding. As is the antithesis, which is the good, which is God, which is beyond belief, beyond understanding. That people will reach out, that people will help, that people will do what is right, people will love. And you understand, that's what we're called to do. That is our calling as Christians. To be the God force here in this world. To be the God in this world. By being the good in this world. By being the hands, the legs, the mouth that reaches out to these people. Wherever they may be. And sometimes it's us. And remember, you've been touched. God has touched you. How? Through others. I remember a few years back having a surgery. And my doctor told me, he looked at me and he says, you know, we're just the hands. It's God who's directing this surgery. I'll never forget that. And the comfort it gave me. Because I knew no matter what, it was an act of love. I knew that love was radiating through their hands, through the physicians. The physician of the physician was doing the healing. And that's what we're called to do. To bring that love here in this world. We have Anush today with her pomegranate seeds for today. It is a reflection on the Boston Marathon. I haven't heard it yet. Looking forward to hearing it with you. Here's Anush.
Remember the helpers. I can't help but get tearful when I see the beautiful face of Richard Martin, the little 8-year-old boy who lost his life in Boston a couple days ago, a victim of the senseless bombing. I can't make sense of it. Who could possibly do something like this? My heart hurts for these families that lost their loved ones and for those that are injured. And of course, just like 9/11, it makes you realize our temporary nature, our frailty, and how life as we know it can change in an instant. As of today, we still don't know who did this. No one has taken responsibility for it. There was talk today of a possible suspect. People are on edge, security is tightened. But there's something else I've noticed, too, that is very heartbreaking. As soon as we heard of the bombings, the posts on Facebook and the internet started. Vicious comments about Muslims, terrorists, nuking other countries, retaliation. I even read about it being a government plot by our president to take the focus off of North Korea. Seriously? Yep, it's all there. And it's incredibly ugly and sad. And we don't even have a suspect. I understand that we're hurting. We're in pain. We have lost lives and freedoms. I understand about terrorism and extremists. It's unjustifiable. It is frightening and painful, but filling our hearts with hatred, that is just as frightening and painful to me. We will then be no better than our perpetrators. I don't really have an answer, but I do know that hatred is not the answer. So what can we do? Well, how about being kind to one another, hugging our children, loving our families, spending more time together and not playing into the hatred. Don't be a party to negative comments and speech, especially when it deals with stereotyping. Remember that there are more good people in the world than bad. And pray. Pray for peace, for patience, and for love to permeate our lives. Pray for lives lost and lives changed because of this tragedy. And pray for an end to this violence. Finally, I wanted to share this. It's something I read from one of my favorite childhood TV personalities, Mr. Rogers. He says, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.' To this day, especially in times of disaster, I remember my mother's words, and I am always comforted by realizing that there are still so many helpers, so many caring people in this world." Such a beautiful sentiment that was carried through childhood into adulthood. We need to all look for the helpers, and better yet, we need to become the helpers. This is Anush wishing you a pomegranate day filled with hope and ripe with possibilities.
Very nice. Thank you, Anush, so much. How beautiful, how appropriate. Look for the helpers. Look for the helpers. Look for the good. Look for God. There he is. Very appropriate. Thank you. Hey, listen, this is like the magic that I talk about. You know, this is the magic when I talk about like what's happening here at Apostle, what happens in Armadoxy. It's just people, good people coming together and putting their energy, their resources together. And I know so many of you get involved by becoming partners with us, and partners by praying for us, by remembering us constantly. I want to give you an opportunity to get involved and hear Susie to tell you how.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the fifth year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. the message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
You know, last night when we finished the event with Baret Maronyan, the Orphans of the Genocide, the Archbishop asked me to conclude with some words, and I was just compelled because there were so many good comments that were given. People also, with those good comments, gave a constructive, I don't want to say criticism, but let's say constructive suggestions. You should have done this, you should have done that, you know. And, of course, there were the people that got up and encouraged him by saying, you know, we can't wait for your next documentary. Okay, those are all nice words. But there's another expression that we got to remember. It's called, put your money where your mouth is. And I couldn't help it. I got up and I just, like, looked at these people. I said, okay, you guys have given some great suggestions. And I think people were expecting me to kind of like wind it down with, you see a clerical figure. And most of the people that were at this event, I did not know me. And they're looking for somebody who's going to like kind of wind it down and send them off home to La La Land. And I refused. I got after them. I said, all right, it's time to look out and start signing some checks. Because you want to see this continue. You need to put your money where your mouth is. And I realize that not everybody is able to give financially. I mean, there's no shame in that. Okay, some people can't give financially. That's fine. But there's other ways of being supportive. There's other ways of contributing to the cause. And I brought up this image, and I wish I hadn't. But I said, you know, we have the ability to communicate across continents with our computers. I mean, Kim Kardashian bends over and her picture gets smeared across the internet from one side of the world to the other side. Okay, that's fine. You want to forward those pictures. How about forwarding the good stuff? How about forwarding this man's video? How about telling people you came and saw the Orphans of the Genocide and you liked it? Writing a commentary. Get out there and do something. And it's the same challenge that we give here on Epostle. I mean, there's a lot of people that say, keep up the good work. Thank you for doing this. We appreciate that. And I've always told you, it's on your prayers that this ministry is built. And in line with what we've been talking about today, okay, let's put some action to it. Let's become those helpers. Let's become the good. Let's become the hands of God. So we would very much appreciate the donations that you make to this ministry, to Epostle, but at the same time, we very much appreciate you forwarding the links, sending out emails to your friends, to your families, getting on Facebook, not only liking us, but sharing our links with your friends, letting them know that this is a valuable ministry in your life. And this is how Epostle grew. This is how Epostle grows. By sharing, by praying. In a few weeks, we're going to be celebrating the 5th anniversary of Epostle. Now, before the 5th, I want to tell you about the 10th. And that's how we're going to end today, because I want to share with you a beautiful anniversary that's taking place. It takes place on May 5th. It is the 10th anniversary of the St. Peter Armenian Church and Youth Ministry Center. And this is a small little church that's in the corner of Glendale that has really a worldwide mission. You know about it because it's responsible for Epostle. It's been responsible for the In Issues ministry. You know it because it's been responsible for Dativ Outreach. Yes, it has been responsible for defining what the Armenian Church is all about today. And I want to invite you to share in this anniversary. If you're a little bit far away, if you're in the Glendale, Southern California area, please do join us. It's May 5th. And if you're not, you can participate by adding your well wishes. We have a nice little booklet that's going to be coming out. And I'm going to put a link on our show notes today, a form actually, that'll help you decide how you want to participate. But I would love to hear some people participate from the apostle branch of the family, okay? Yeah, the apostle group of people, okay? Let us know you're from apostle. We'd love to have that in the booklet as well. Hey, we are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us today and invite you to get involved with us throughout the week. We are at Epostle. It's easy to remember. It's Apostle with an E because it's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. Get involved with us at epostle.net. You'll find today's podcast as well as all the other podcasts we've ever done since the beginning of time. We have sermons on there, all kinds of great resources for the Christian who's involved in it. Active Christianity. Yes, this weekend we start off our new show called The Armenian Christian Today. Do pray for us and do remember all of our ministries in your prayer. Also join us at the mothership inhisshoes.org, especially this time of year. You want to check out that video that's called Leveraging Love. It kind of gives you an idea of what we're all about. Leveraging Love. It's on the inhisshoes.org website. Hey, for the wonderful crew that put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Rahe, our webman, for Anush with her pomegranate seeds, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.